And our guest today, Mark Stoffel, mandolin player, great musician that you might more readily recognize as a member of the fine, fine band Chris Jones and the Night Drivers. Mark has released a solo album on Mountain Home Music. The name of the album is Coffee and Cake. We're going to talk to Mark in detail about that. You're going to learn a lot about Mark that you probably didn't know. He's a long history, been playing music for a while, comes from across the water. He'll tell you how he got into bluegrass from his origins in Germany. Start the show off with one of the tunes that he picked to be played during this interview, Shadow Band. Then we'll get right into discussing Mark Stoffel's brand new album and just discussing him. Really nice guy, great musician. I think one of the finer mandolin players you're going to find in all of music, certainly also including bluegrass. For the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass, you just heard the first cut, Shadow Bands, from an album released by my guest, Mark Stoffel. The album is entitled Coffee and Cake. It's on Mountain Home Music. And Mark Stoffel, welcome so much for the first time, hopefully not the last time, to Unreal Bluegrass. I love the album.
Well, that makes me very happy, Steve. Yeah, and I'm happy to be on your show.
There are 13 cuts. They're instrumentals. I guess you had a hand in writing in all but three of them. We'll talk about this later. There's three other tunes that one stretches back to the 40s with the Glenn Miller Orchestra, which is such a cool. We'll end the show with that. But there must be like, I don't know how'd you get so many mandolin players on In the Mood, and we'll talk about that before we get there. But that just tickles me. It's a great, and everybody has a little piece of it. But we'll get to that in a minute. Listen, Mark, I think the audience probably knows you, and I know you first and foremost. As I don't know how long you've been the regular mandolin player for Chris Jones and the Night Drivers.
I've been with Chris for about 12 years. About, I can't say exactly because I kind of slowly moved into that part, there was not really one date. There was never an audition. I started playing a few gigs with his wife, Sally Jones.
Oh yeah.
And I met both Chris and Sally through Duck Connect, who was the first banjo player with Chris Jones and the Night Drivers, and who it kind of goes back to my Illinois college days when I met Doug. And so through Doug, I met Sally. Sally asked me to play a few gigs with the Sidewinders, Sally Jones and the Sidewinders, and then through that, Chris just asked me if I would be interested in becoming a Night Driver.
And I've told Chris this before, I miss Sally singing. I wish she could record more. I've always enjoyed her song. I guess the last album she did, I know I've got it here somewhere in the library, but I know she's doing other things, but I just always enjoyed Sally. And last time I saw her perform live, it was kind of like her, and then there was Kristen and a couple other people, and then they just, I guess that was, she got busy with something in Canada, is what I understand. But I did enjoy her so much. I enjoyed her voice.
I do, too. And, you know, whenever we play in Switzerland, which is, like, usually, under normal circumstances, like, once a year, she comes along, and then she's kind of part of the band.
Oh, good. Good. Mark, you're a fantastic mandolin player. I've had discussions with Chris. He knows it, but I mean, I always want to bring out the excellence in the band of Chris Jones and the Night Drivers, and I've had so many friends go through the band that are still parts of the band as it develops. But Chris has no problem agreeing with me on this statement. I think that Mark Stoffel should every year be in the final five for the voting for Mandolin Player of the Year. I think it's an automatic. I think you belong in that count. They should just keep make it four. And everybody else can vote for those four, but you should be in that five that goes every year in front of the voting electorate.
Well, what can I say? It sure would be nice, but I realize it's a big field and there's so many good players. And a lot of it is name recognition. And so a lot of the placement in the first and second ballot, especially the first ballot, second ballot, it has to do with, you know, who do I know best and gets a lot of, you know, I personally never really looked for a lot of exposure, I'm just perfectly fine at where I am.
Listen, you should be reserved about opinions about yourself and whatnot, but it's just my opinion, and I will say again, Chris had no delay at all in agreeing. Chris knows a lot of mandolin players, but so now you do have your first vehicle, if you will, of this new album, Coffee and Cake. And we played for the audience the very first cut on Shadow Bands. I'm going to ask you to explain some of these things. You have notes about what they meant to you. Since they're all instrumentals, there are no lyrics. So Shadow Bands, you make a comment about the total eclipse. And I'm always curious about this, what might be the inspiration for someone who writes music. There's a song on here that you say, you, great thing about instrumentals, you can call them anything, so this is yin and yang. I assume Shadow Bands you put in there for a reason as a title.
Yeah, so Shadow Bands, when I made this up, it was in 2017, and everybody here where I live in Southern Illinois was under the spell and very deep anticipation of this eclipse that was about to happen. And Southern Illinois was at a special spot because it was like the spot of the longest duration. And at the same time, it's also in the center of the 2024 eclipse. So it's like it's great to be here and see not only one but two eclipses. But in 2017, everything was about that here. And that's when I made up the tune. And that kind of came to mind. There's a couple little, wouldn't call it a bridge, but little instrumental segments in there that reminded me a little bit of what Shadow Bands actually are. And so if I may explain just briefly, I try to make it short.
But absolutely.
Shadow Bands, it's like a phenomenon of wavy patterns on the ground. So it's a phenomenon that happens on the ground. It's sort of a wavery pattern on the ground. Similar, you can compare it to like looking into a swimming pool and you see these waves, these light refractions. And they happen twice, just a minute or two right before the totality and a minute or two right after totality. It's because the sun just has this really narrow slice, and that's what somehow breaks the light differently and causes this phenomenon. And, and that's something I saw with my own eyes, and it was so magical. And so when we cut this over, when I wrote the tune, I put two of those Shadow Bands, symbolic Shadow Bands melody lines in there.
I've never heard the term before. I understand it now as you explain it. It's like every other tune on here. Everything on here is just, and you have so many great people, and I don't want to miss naming people that you have on each cut. They vary a little bit, but I want you to feel free when it comes to you to mention the people that are joining you on these cuts. In Shadowlands, there's a lot of different people. If you want to mention some of those, we don't have to do it on every of them, but I want people to know that not only is Mark a great player, but he's joined by the best of the best, and I think that says a lot. And when we get to the final cut, In the Mood, that is a mandolin player's dream to hear all those people participate in that. But let's talk a little bit about some of the members that you have played throughout, not necessarily limited to Shadow Bands, but some of the people that have joined you on this.
Yes, I mean, I invited, that's one of the perks of having played with Chris for so long. I got to meet a lot of people in the scene that I otherwise would have not had a chance to. So the fiddle player is a guy from Northern Ireland. His name is Niall Murphy. Phenomenal, really phenomenal. Just Google him. He does solo stuff. He does Irish. He does traditional Irish. He does progressive stuff. He plays bluegrass like a champ. And we ran into him while we were touring Ireland in 2018 and jammed with him a couple of nights and he came to shows a couple of times because he liked what we were doing, and so we just kind of made friends with him, and he was like real fun to work with.
Well, I recognize Gina Furtado.
Gina is on Shadow Bands, right? And she was around when I wrote the tune, and I actually bounced some of those ideas back and forth with her for the tune while we were on tour, and because it's kind of a melodic, playful kind of a piece, she was like the perfect person for that, I thought. And if you listen to the solo again, you'll see exactly what I mean. She has this real amazing approach, melodic approach, lyrical approach to a melody or to a chord progression that not very many banjo players, let alone musicians.
She has a different vision for the banjo than a lot of us do. She has a very personal, to me, I think she's wonderful.
Yeah. And, you know, the less known people on the record are Ross Thurmond and Josh Morrison. Ross there's a bass player who I've known him for a long, long time. He's from North Carolina originally, and now lives in Tasmania, but he's played with the Carter Brothers from Nashville. He's played with Vassar Clements and a few other people. And he's, most of all, he's a dear friend, and we harmonize really well when we play. There are just not a lot of musicians out there that you can just close your eyes and everything just works out just right, you know, when you, all these little hesitations at the end of a song or whatever. I mean, just the feel of it is we're always sort of on par, and that's really nice. So he's not a mechanical player, but a very emotional player, and that's what I love about him.
Mark, there are so many great players on this album. You've mentioned a few of them. What I would like to do before we get into any more of the cuts, which we'll touch on several of them, is how did you get into playing bluegrass music? I want to talk a little bit about your origin. I know that you met up with Chris and Sally, but how did you get playing mandolin, bluegrass mandolin?
There are many reasons. I was always into music. I was always into American music. I was like glued to the AM radio listening to Armed Forces Network, which was in the mid-70s and late-70s was a great time to listen to radio. That was just good stuff on the radio, and I always loved it. And I wanted to have an instrument other than piano. And, I was taught to play piano, but I could never take it with me to Boy Scout camp or anywhere else. So I asked my mom to get me an instrument other than a guitar, and I had a ukulele in mind, like a little guitar, uke. Christmas came, and I got a mandolin. And I didn't really know what to do. I found a book called Bluegrass Mandolin Project.
Yep, I know it well.
That was the book. And that's a really, really nice book, and I just dived right into it. And, you know, fortunately, there was a little record in it, like one of those 45s, thin vinyl.
Yeah, they used to call them sound sheets.
Sound sheets, yeah. And it was square and really, really just irritated me, so I took a scissor and made it round. And it was just really just easy and intuitive, and I knew enough English at the time because, you know, kids in Germany learn English, I think they started fourth grade. It wasn't difficult at all, and so I just dived right into it and eventually got to meet people who were like-minded, which that's kind of how things go when you're crazy about a thing. You're looking for like-minded people, and lo and behold, there were some in Munich.
Well, I'm talking to Mark Stoffel, by the way. So, Mark, you get the mandolin, but who would you listen to? Who would you want to play like once you got this mandolin, once you kind of figured out, you know, the tunings and what you were going to do? Who did you want to play like? Who did you listen to try to emulate?
First, at the very beginning, was mostly Jack Tottle. So I listened to the book, and I was trying to copy his tunes and his tone and everything. Then I was able to find records, either in record stores or trade some cassettes with some of my like-minded friends. And the type of music that we could get our hands on at the time was David Grisman, like the Rounder album,
sure.
Early Dog stuff,
yep.
Country Gazette, of all bands, which is very interesting, Seldom Steam, Hot Rise, the very first Hot Rise album was I think, had just come out at the time. And then some of the Tony Rice stuff, the early Tony Rice. Manzanita was one of my first records, which is a pretty good blueprint for acoustic, for good acoustic instrumental and bluegrass. Let me see, what else? Newgrass Revival. I was totally ate up by Sam Bush playing. I guess so. If it comes down to the mandolin, it was probably Ricky Skaggs, Sam Bush, David Gerstmann, some of those guys.
It's interesting when you mention those because it must have been around the same time. And I'm not trying to make this about me because it's not, but I was into those same sounds in the 70s. We talked about this a little bit off the air that I was really into the Ridge Runner records coming out of the West with. A lot of those people that we've talked about. So and then, of course, and Grisman and Rounder, those were the places to go to. And Ridge Runner's not anymore, but Rounder still is a place you can go to find, get exposure to all those things. And Grisman's still playing. And of course, Sam is too with the Sam Bush Band. Those are great. They're tough ones to try to learn from. But I mean, those are great sources to start off. Give you something to shoot for.
Yeah, the tones. And you know, the thing is when you're really ate up with it, and you have, you don't, you know, talented or not. But I think the learning curve when you first start something is very steep at first, and it kind of levels off a little bit. At least that was how it was for me. So I I try to play along with those solos right away. I don't know if any recordings of me that were probably really crummy, but I was able to play along, you know, and I had a cheap mandolin, and I just tried to emulate as much as I could to sound a little bit like them. That was a lot of fun. And another thing which is interesting is now, because I play out a lot and we play larger events every once in a while, I get to meet some of the people that I was like absolutely worshipping at the time. And this is really, was and still is a little intimidating. You know, you come to a place and suddenly there's Sam Bush, and then you got to chat with Sam Bush, and he grabs your mandolin, and you kind of talk, you know, kind of shoot the breeze with Sam Bush, and it's just totally unbelievable. Sometimes I had to pinch myself and go, wow, this is cool. And the other day I was not, in December, or right before COVID hit, more or less, I went to Nashville to meet Stephen Gilchrist, to do some work on my mandolin. I walk into the shop, Card of Vintage, and there's Ricky Skaggs. And Gilchrist introduces me to Ricky Skaggs, and I talk to Ricky Skaggs and Gilchrist and this and that. And so we just kind of, same thing. It's like, oh, wow, this is so cool. Because these are the people that 40 years ago, I was just trying to, you know, I'm missing a fitting idiom here, but I was trying to totally... I was absorbed by it.
That's good. That's good. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when you meet them and they're real human beings, and you're actually kind of risen to the level that you can meet them eye to eye now, I guess that'd be the way to say it. And you do get to meet them eye to eye physically and also literally, that you're playing on a level that they ought to respect everything that you're doing, because you're so fluid in what you play and your ideas are so good. Talking to Mark Stossel, and Mark, we're talking, we wanted to get you on to talk about the new album Coffee and Cake, which is 13 tunes on it. I would say this: if I had to play Spot the Polka tune mm-hmm. on here, I would go to Frost on the Pretzel.
Mm-hmm.
Is that I'm pretty accurate on those? I keep trying to find different little ways to get into the music, but Frost mm-hmm. on the Pretzel is the fourth cut, and there's definitely a little bit of a polka kind of a melody running through that.
Oh yeah, you know, I always liked those polka tunes. Maybe not so much when I grew up in polka land, but then later when I listened to some of the southwestern bluegrass, like Texas Swing, and there's a lot of fiddling from that part of the country that was very heavily influenced by German and Czech traditions, you know, and it kind of mixes. When it mixes with bluegrass and the Appalachian, it's kind of it's very interesting. And Kenny Baker had a few of those tunes also, that very playful melodies with a lot of trills and then key changes, and so that was the idea behind Frost on the Pretzel, and that's also why I named it Frost on the Pretzel, because it's of course a little play on Frost on the Pumpkin, which is a Kenny Baker fiddle tune, and me being from Germany, and I'm a pretzel baker.
And you make your own pretzels, I know, I was going to tell you, yeah, that's it.
I felt like, the first title, the working title was Beer and Pretzels. But then, somehow I objected to the idea to have beer in a song title. And so I decided to change it to Frost.
There are so many great tunes. They're the title cut, Coffee and Cake, comes right after that. You didn't have a problem with coffee, but you had a problem with beer, but you put coffee in there. I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Well, coffee and cake, the combination being kind of a cultural concept in the old world, at least where I came from. And my mother was from Holland, my dad from Germany, but there was not a day, especially in the weekend, where people would not sit down 3:30 in the afternoon and have coffee and cake, maybe with a little whipping cream even.
And I love the displays inside of this album, by the way. That's something that I'm always intrigued with, is that it's kind of you in that setting somewhere. I don't know where it is, but I think that the photography inside is clearly has to do with coffee and cake.
Yes, there's a pie shop in Murfreesboro, Illinois, where I live, and it's called Rule of Pie, and they're great, and it's tiny little. There's just a couple tables and a counter where you can order your pie, mostly for takeout, but you can sit there, and we just filled up the whole place with friends, but it didn't take very many to fill the place up, like 20, and, you know, had lots of pies for prop. I told everyone, if you come, I'll pay you pie and coffee. It was a lot of fun. And my wife took the pictures. She's a photographer. And I had ordered a coconut cream pie, but when we were...
That's not what you got.
Because I love coconut cream pie, but when we started the photo shoot, I looked over to my friend Bill, and he had a rhubarb strawberry pie. And then I felt, I'm not here to enjoy my favorite pie. I'm here for a photo shoot, and a rhubarb strawberry pie looks a lot better. It kind of, it sets itself apart a lot better.
Yeah, okay, I'll give you
and
that.
So,
I'll give you
so
that.
So I took, because I had paid for it anyway, so I just took the pie away from him and gave him mine. So that's what's there in front of me on the table.
I want you to talk a little bit about Buckminster Waltz, and then I want you to introduce a song. But for the listeners, Buckminster Fuller, I've tried to figure out how to describe him, which is impossible. And I know that you have some inspiration from things that he did, as you describe in the liner notes. Buckminster Fuller, I don't know how to really. He was an inventive kind of philosopher, problem solver, a futurist. I don't know how many labels you can put on the man.
I know, yeah, he's an amazing guy, and the only reason why I'm familiar with him and his work, at least vaguely, because there's no, his catalog is so huge, as you said, that
yeah.
It's hard. But his forming years were here at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale, before he moved, I think, to one of those Ivy League universities. But his forming years, and we have a lot of his models that he was a visionary.
Yeah.
He could see a lot of the problems that we're facing today. He could see it, and he knew, and he wrote about it back in the 60s. There's like one called Spaceship Earth that he wrote, you know, about how Earth is a self-contained system and it ought to be respected and not being messed with or destroyed, and all that wisdom. Well, he's, in many ways, he's just an amazing guy. And he also was an architect or a designer. And so he is the inventor of the geodesic dome. Did I say that right?
Yeah, sure. And it's the most structurally sound economic use of space. And I lost track of what it was based on. I mean, I think he was into honeycombs and stuff like that. But it supports its own weight. Here's the best example I can think of. Even if you haven't been there, most people would recognize the big dome outside of Walt Disney World. That's pretty close to a geodesic dome. It has more dimples in it, I think, than he did. But that looks pretty much what you might see as far as the panels that are put together, and it supports its own weight. Kind of an amazing.
Yeah, and there's one in Carbondale that he actually built, the prototype.
Oh, really?
There. And then, so on campus at Southern Illinois University is right, there's a lake, and then they built a pavilion or a gazebo. And it's a geodesic dome, but it's kind of open on the side. But the structure is exactly that dome. Right underneath, in the middle, at the center point of that dome, with a mandolin. And you play. It's the eeriest amount of acoustic response that I've ever experienced. And so that's where me and Josh, the guitar player, sat, and we worked on that waltz. Because we wanted to sit outside, it was a nice spring day, and so let's go to that dome and sit there. And way inspired the making of this tune, and so felt like there's nothing more appropriate than naming the tune after him.
It's a great title. Listen, I want you to introduce for the audience the second cut, "March of the Lemmings."
"March of the Lemmings" is one of those tunes where I came up with the title later. And it didn't really matter, but I think I've never done this before. But I worked on a documentary for the Eclipse. Now I'm going back to the Eclipse a little bit, and I needed music for a segment in this documentary, and I just couldn't find anything. And you know, and I used GarageBand, I used loops sometimes to come up with a certain, you know, to add, you know, a music bed to a visual. And in that case, I just took a microphone. One of those USB mics, put it in front of me, and I watched this segment, and I just played whatever just came to my mind, and that was basically what came out, and so the original version of this tune is in that Eclipse documentary that I produced, and
boy, you really got taken with the Eclipse, didn't you?
Yeah, I really was, and you know, I can send you and your and your listeners a link, if you want to put that on, to it's a one-hour documentary. It's called In the Shadow.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And it's really a fun documentary, I think. And there's a lot of original music in it, too. But in any case, so I thought I needed to pick up this tune and produce it a little bit more, because what's in the movie or in the documentary is very, very, you know, bare bone. And so I produced it a little bit more. You know? And I also used my slide mandolin, my Dobro mandolin, and you have some slide stuff in there, which kind of changes the tone a little bit right there.
It's a great tune. With that introduction then from Mark Stoffel, we're going to listen to the March of the Lemmings, which is off of his new album, Coffee and Cake, which is on Mountain Home. We'll listen to all of us will listen to the March of the Lemmings, and we'll come back and talk to Mark a little bit more. So hold on. There you heard it. Mark described it so well. You just heard the March of the Lemmings, which was actually originally written for a documentary. All of this goes back to the Eclipse, and you got Buckminster Fuller, and you got all kinds of cool references in this album, Mark. It's an interesting path that you've taken.
Well, thank you. Like you said, you can, or like my friend John Weisberger said, you can name an instrument of anything, but I really do think that sometimes, or a lot of times, the way they're conceived are linked to certain experiences, or certain dates, or certain times, and this gives you an opportunity to name it, you know, appropriately.
I think Tony Trischka has said that he names them after streets that he's driving by.
Mm-hmm.
Which, if you think back, yeah, that probably makes more sense than anything else, but that's an interesting inspiration for that. You do a Bill Monroe tune. I'm going to talk a little bit about that. There's one tune on here that's public domain, which is Daly's reel, Make a Little Boat. But and then the last one, I want to get to the In the Mood, which is just amazing. I don't want to skip over Finn and Ollie because of what it's about, but talk a little bit about The Old Mountaineer, the Bill Monroe tune.
The Old Mountaineer is a tune it's not the most obscure tunes that Bill Monroe wrote, because there are many that he wrote that are not recorded. This one is not recorded on a studio album, it's on a live record. I don't have the record, and I do know that version now, but when I first learned the tune from my friend Lodi van Voltrup, he's a Dutch fiddle player, and he's a good friend with Jens Krüger before he moved from Switzerland to North Carolina. And during those days, Lodi and Jens, and sometimes I, would get together and just jam, and they pulled out that song and played it. So I did, from Lodi and Jens Little, and I know that since other people have picked it up, it's on my Cleveland record, but it's still anything but overplayed. It's a great tune.
It is. You've got friends, I guess, kind of a little bit of a nod to the Chris Jones Night Driver's legacy. You've got Ned Lubrecki, one of my favorite banjo players. You've also got Jeremy Garrett, who is one of my all-time favorite musicians of any kind. And Jeremy had played with Chris a long time ago.
Yeah, he played. Yeah, there was the Chris Jones Experience or something.
Yeah.
The Night Drivers.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for a while, even Jeremy's dad was in the band.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they were like touring together. That was not too long before I joined the band. It was like a five-piece, and there's a lot of interesting stories from those days.
I mentioned, yeah, I can imagine, because I know both of those guys, and I just can't imagine that traveling with either one or both. I know you played with Ned for two albums, or were you with the Night Drivers for one album with Ned, or
no,
maybe
many?
Just,
we had,
that's right.
First one is Cloud of Dust.
Yeah.
We did a couple for Rebel Records. Cloud of Dust had no record label, and then I think we did two with Mountain Homes, at least four or five, maybe six.
Yeah, okay. And then Gina Furtado overlapped for two.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to think of. I knew Ned had been there for a while. Mm-hmm. There is a public domain. The only public domain tune is a Daly's Reel. It's a medley, and Make a Little Boat. Like I mentioned, I wanted to mention that you participated in writing of all of those but three songs. We've talked about Old Mountaineer. This is one that was public domain, and we're going to get into the everybody would recognize In the Mood from the Glenn Miller Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
But tell me a little bit about this, why you chose this public domain.
Those two tunes? It's a medley that I always liked tunes in B-flat. I think the mandolin and the fiddle, and they're tuned alike. have a very special tone and character when you play tunes in B-flat, because you have the open G and the open D string that work great with B-flat and E-flat, which is the four chord, and it just gives it a nice touch, you know. And very many mandolin players shy away from B-flat because they think it's all closed, which it's not. There's lots of open strings in it, and it has very nice, special character. For that reason, I always liked Daly's reel.
There's so many things in public domain. I know it's hard sometimes to pick them out, but if you go back and find them and give some thought to them like you have here, there's so many things that are so rich and so many things you can do with them and bring them back to life. And then that happens often, I think, in bluegrass. Somebody will find something like that, and all of a sudden it gets around. Like you mentioned, maybe the old mountaineer is starting to pick up a little bit of speed, and they just reintroduce tunes, and then all of a sudden they become things that people want to hear and they want to play on their own instruments if they're able to. But
right.
There's so many things in public domain. I don't even know how you begin to dive into that and get anything out of it.
Yeah, and I don't claim to be super knowledgeable about everything that's out there. You again mentioned John Weisberger, who's a former bandmate with Chris,
mm-hmm.
And he knows so much. And so when we were looking for a tune for me to play when I joined the band over a decade ago, you know, every instrumentalist gets a feature. And I said, maybe I could do a medley, maybe Daly's Reel is something else. And then we were kind of bouncing some ideas around. And he said, why don't you try and make a little boat? and I listened to it. And there's a Kenny Baker version where Sam Bush just plays mandolin on Kenny Baker's version. That's a beautiful tune all around. It's a little bit like Porcadier. It's in the key of D, but then it kind of changes to A in the middle, a little key change. And it's just a great tune. And I love it. I mean, the title is just can't beat it.
Well, you were in a band with two pretty good historians. I mean, I know John Weisberger really well. I know Chris, but they both have a lot of knowledge of there is a lot.
Going down the road with John and Chris.
Yeah.
And listening to, you know, a lot of times we listen to local bluegrass radio stations or SiriusXM. Or sometimes old country, even. It doesn't matter.
Right.
I mean, they have always a lot of background. You listen to a song and you get the background info, everything about it, you know, from John and Chris as they were listening to it.
The next to last cut on the album is Finn and Ollie, which your description really kind of is a nod to. Well, you describe it, because I don't know how people write tunes. I know that you can name a tune, whatever, but I feel like this Finn and Ollie was actually written with a purpose, and the title was written for a purpose too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm an older dad. I was partying the first half of my life, and then I became a responsible citizen and also a family man. And I can't even tell you how much I enjoy it and how lucky I consider myself. And I love those two boys. They're now 9 and 11, almost. It's just so sweet to have these boys, you know, and have kids, and it's just so wonderful. And so I wrote this tune that hopefully reflects that a little bit. There's a little bit of minor in there for sad moments, and then there's sweetness in there, and there's a little happiness in there. It's just a sort of an introspective little tune.
I thought so. And I wanted you to get a chance to talk about your boys too.
Yeah, they're and you know, sadly, neither one of them is too much into playing acoustic instruments. They lay around the house, you know. We have a bass, we have a banjo, we have fiddles and mandolins and all kinds of guitar. And everything's just out in the open for them to just pick up. But it hasn't happened yet, so.
Well,
you
never know when lightning might strike. It's hard, you know.
I know.
It's hard to tell.
Listen, yeah, and I was 14 when I began. So
yeah, there you go. There you go. Been chatting with Mark Stoffel about a lot of things, not the least of which is new album, Coffee and Cake on Mountain Home. I want to talk to you. I want you to explain how people can find it, and then I want to get into the last cut. But when, I think it's available now. Is it available now?
Yeah, it's available. We had a street date was about a couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
And it's available both on your usual streaming and download services.
Okay.
And the hard copy is available. Well, you know, as you know, these are strange, curious times, so we can't go play and sell them at concerts
which is usually how musicians make a little extra money on this. So that is gone, but at least it's available on my website, and I believe it's also available on Amazon. So
okay, there is good.
So I mean, if you want the real album and the cover and yeah, with the cover art,
I like the covers and the cover art. Me personally, I still like that stuff. And that's what I would suggest people do. Although they download it too, don't frown on that. You know, if it gets to their ears, that's all that matters. Now, this last cut on the album, In the Mood, the description, just the listing of the musicians takes longer than most of the descriptions of the songs. And In the Mood, I think everybody probably knows from the Glenn Miller Orchestra, but I can't even count how much. Yeah, that's one of the first things that when you get a banjo, you start thinking, oh, these three strings are kind of like In the Mood, and they are, and so you start playing that. But so how did you think about getting all? I mean, how many people are playing mandolin on this thing?
Including me, there's 18. but there's also some doubles because I have. I could name them all right now if you want to, but some of them, like Martino Coppola and Steve Smith, also have mandolas or mandocellos or octave mandolins. And for In the Mood, you know, you need. I wish I would have had a larger variety of those lower tuned instruments as well from the mandolin family.
Right.
But so that's what they did. So if you add those, we're like at 21 or 22. Just mandolin family instrument.
That was it's so much fun. It's over. It's almost 4 minutes, 15 seconds. And I'm glad you did. Thanks for doing it. It's a great tune, and we're going to play it in a minute. But what made you think this would be something you should put on your first album under your name?
Well, we had a band in Germany in the '80s, and that was kind of our showstopper tune. And it was just us. And I decided again because I had this privilege now of knowing all these people, and they know me, and I knew that I could a lot of them would probably take the ball and run with the idea if I asked them, and they all did, and so the time was right for it, and I knew exactly how I wanted to do it. But you know, it technically, or from a technical point of view, it was a challenge.
How do you get, talk about that a little bit, because when you look at it, you think, first of all, it's great. There is no trombone part that comes in, and it's all stringed instruments. Now, I could hum it, but you know it, the part where the Glenn Miller being a trombone player, that as you're going through the dun dun, I mean, it's all done with strings, and there is a lower register of a mandolin sounding instrument in there that always comes back on that part. But talk about the logistics, if we want to use a word.
Well, I knew the parts. I had to just tab them out and get all those parts ready. For all the mandolins, there's a total of 4 parts, and then there's the mandocello and all that other stuff. And I prepared all of this meticulously, so I had all of that. And then I was trying to figure out which one of the players would be, you know, would take what part, and a lot of it is just random. So I just gave them all folders with everything they needed to know, the recordings, all the parts isolated, and the tabs for them to prepare. And you know, as most of your listeners probably know, we were not all in the same room to do this, which would have been nice. And so this whole project was sort of a piecemeal. Some of the sessions involved a lot of people, and other players just submitted their parts through the internet to me, especially those who live either on the other side of the world or east or west coast, really far away. And by that time, COVID had already kind of started.
So okay,
that was the way to do it anyway. And so people were just submitting it in all different kinds of ways. But the first session was in Chicago with Don Sternberg, the great Don Sternberg on rhythm guitar, with his bass player from his jazz combo, and me. So that was sort of the basis to which everybody was playing. And then I went to Nashville a couple of times to get most of the mandolin players who live in the Tennessee area to come and play their parts. And everybody else is basically just submitting it through Dropbox.
It gets so hard. I want to start naming the names, but then I'll be reading the names for half an hour. But I see, you know, everybody that you can think of. Jesse Brock was just on the show. Nate Lee, Wayne Benson, everybody knows Wayne from Third Time Out. John Reichman and Chris Luquette, I would imagine, mailed theirs in from the far
exactly.
West Coast. Yeah, I would think they would have to do that because they're out that way. But it's a blast. I mean, I didn't want to start doing it. I did it. I'm not going to name them all, but it's just a blast to hear it on mandolin. I really appreciate it. Of course, I'm a big Glenn Miller fan too. But
there's one other little funny piece of trivia in regards to this recording. So I had asked each player to improvise. You know, for the most part, they had to totally stick to the program. But in the middle, there's a kind of a part where everybody kind of gets to do whatever they want to improvise. So I had a full solo for everyone. But for the studio recording or for the album version of it, there was no way you could have like 17 solos.
No, you can't. People taking a ride throughout this whole thing. It would sound like bumblebees.
It would have been appalling to most listeners because it's just something purely for mandolin people. So for the album version, I listened to those solos over and over and over again to fit them together, you know, like a puzzle, like a 1,500 piece puzzle where you try to piece it together so it kind of all makes sense, as if we were all in the same room to do this. So it was an editing challenge, but I think it turned out pretty good.
Oh, that's great.
So that's that. So usually each turn is like divided into two, but mostly three parts, and I had and the decisions were made by me which part I used, and sometimes I listened to that input from them, but I would have just dragged things out even further. But the solos are not lost. There's actually a version, and it's 7 minutes long with every solo as a whole, and so I'm going to get that out on the internet or whatever, you know, this will be published at some point too.
Oh, good,
but
good.
So
I'm looking forward to that one. I thought when Becky last year, when Becky Bullard did that Barber's Fiddle, and I think she had 16 or 17 fiddle players, I thought, wow, but now you've topped that.
Well, yeah, and you know what? I had asked a lot of other people too that could have easily been more.
Yeah.
Not everybody was able to do it, or they were busy touring or whatever. So, but I'm glad I got the ones who I got. And not only do we have this nice recording now and this collaboration, but you know, I've bonded with all of them now through that, because some of those players I've never even met in person. But I've always wanted to you know, reach out to them because I'm a big fan of their playing. And so that really helps.
That's nice. That's nice, Mark. This is great. Great album, Mark. Coffee and Cake on Mountain Home Music. I've enjoyed it so much. I'm going to let you go, and for the audience, we're going to play the version of In the Mood that's on this album, which is just a blast. I mean, it's maybe it's just me from being a child and being a Glenn Miller fan, but I think everybody likes In the Mood because it's just got that great, you know, it's probably why Glenn Miller recorded it. It's something you can kind of hang on to. But I appreciate your time so much, man, and I hope to catch up with you down the road somewhere once we can all move around freely.
Oh, that would be so lovely. So lovely.
Listen,
can't wait for things to get back to
boy, really. Moment. Yeah, and I don't know. Nobody knows, so we just have to play it close to the vest. That's all. Mark, thanks so much for your time. I appreciate it a great deal.
I appreciate it, Steve.
All
thank
right.
You so
Mark,
much. Thank you to all your listeners.
Thank you. We'll catch up later.
Sounds good.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye.